Good evening. Thank you for joining us. People who were cooped up at home last summer have been eager to go on vacations this year. But some businesses, which were eager for the crowds, are struggling now. We welcome ABC's Deirdre Bolton to Nightline with this report on the worker shortage.
Under the morning July sun, on the heels of a worldwide lockdown, millions are flocking to the beach. But with all that pent-up demand, there is a downside. Businesses are overwhelmed.
It's been different.
I've seen things I've never thought I would see in my life.
We are facing a worker shortage in every industry.
If you talk to any of the businesses in downtown Rehoboth or any of the beach areas, they're in the exact same scenario. They don't have the help.
Benjamin Gray has called this stretch along the Atlantic home his entire life. Working at the Belmore Inn and Spa in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware for the last 7 years, nothing compares to the stress he sees this summer.
We've seen unprecedented occupancy levels. The tourism industry in the past year alone has skyrocketed.
What has it been like then for you to meet that demand?
It's now finding the staff to be able to make the beds, to make the drinks, to check people in, to check people out, to make sure that we have enough people here to take care of the occupancy levels that we're experiencing.
The luxury hotel where rooms can go for up to $1,000 a night has been packed. As general manager, Benjamin normally oversees three different hotels in the area. But this year, with nowhere near a full staff, he's been forced to wear many hats. Monitoring the front desk, checking in guests, checking out guests, stripping beds, vacuuming rooms, even driving the hotel shuttle to the beach.
Typically for this hotel, we have anywhere from 90 to 100 employees on a regular basis.
And this summer?
Currently right now, I have approximately 25 open positions. So we're looking at around 75 associates to get us through the busiest summer that we've ever seen.
Only halfway through the busy season, Benjamin is desperate to fill those empty positions.
The issue that's happening is that people aren't coming through the door to apply for the jobs or to show up for their interview.
People, they make an interview appointment and then they just don't show up?
Correct. Last 2 weeks alone, I had 16 no-shows to interviews.
16 no-shows? Out of how many appointments?
We had 30 appointments, and out of those 30 people, we had 10 show up.
That's crazy.
It is.
Hotels, restaurants, and other businesses that survived the pandemic are now facing a new challenge, struggling to find and hire the employees they need. Job openings in the U.S. have soared, with more than 9 million positions available. In places like Rehoboth Beach, which sees 4 million visitors during the June, July, and August peak, the struggle to find workers is everywhere.
If you drive down Coastal Highway, which is the primary highway that'll get you to every single beach in the state of Delaware, you'll notice everybody that has a marquee will say, now hiring. And their wages range anywhere from $13 an hour all the way to $22 an hour, with also a signing bonus that they're willing to give you $1,000 to come into the door.
While some potential workers are juggling childcare issues, others remain concerned about COVID infection risks. And many states, like Delaware, are still offering extended unemployment benefits through the end of August. Regardless of the reasons, vacationers in Rehoboth Beach see something off this year.
The service has not been that great. We've had to wait a lot.
You can tell, like, the people working are stretched thin.
I was looking forward to having lunch at a particular restaurant, and they had a sign on the door that said that they were closed from Monday to Thursday because they couldn't staff it during the week. So I was a little disappointed with that.
Employees here are also feeling the pressure.
Last year, I was working sections that had maybe like 4 or 5 tables. Now I'm working a section that's got 5 to 8. And it's not just like an outside section, it's outside and inside.
Even the Rehoboth Beach Patrol has a lifeguard shortage.
It definitely affects how we spread out our people, where we put people. It also puts a lot more pressure on our first year guards, our rookies, coming in because they have to learn fast.
This is Lieutenant Ana Lucia Villabona's 5th summer as a lifeguard on these beaches. She says they've had to spread out their chairs so each guard has to cover a larger area of the beach.
We didn't have as many people like coming back this year, so this year we did actually have to sit like some rookies like together. So they had to like step up and, you know, be able to do what they had to do.
This has been by far the busiest summer we ever had. The crowds, the traffic just way exceeded years past.
Captain Jeff Giles says there are fewer full-time guards this year, due in part to fewer applicants.
How does that weigh on your shoulders with the responsibility that you have?
A lot of the staff will be returning back to college and back to school, so it does worry me that we might not have the amount of personnel that we need coming into the end of August. Always a concern.
Just a block in from the beach in one of the busiest parts of the boardwalk sits Dolly's Candyland. It's been in Tom Eibach's family for almost 100 years. The third generation maker of sweets now heads to his shop at 5:30 in the morning to start pulling that famous saltwater taffy. He used to employ 25 to 30 people. Now he makes it alone.
Are your hours different?
Yeah, they're much different than they used to be. I'm like usually 12 to 15 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now I used to work maybe somewhere between 9 and 11. I've increased the hours, you know, quite a bit. But we've got to make the business run, okay? And that's simple as that.
Tom now depends on his family to help run the family business.
Yeah, I have my wife in here. I have my sister-in-law. I have my daughter. And I have two other workers.
But it sounds like it's falling on your shoulders personally.
Well, I mean, you don't have any staff, so that's where it's got to fall.
Two blocks down the boardwalk, you can find Funland, where another longtime family-owned business is feeling many of the same stresses.
We have more people than any of those previous 60 summers, but we just don't quite have the staff to be able to accommodate them.
Chris Starr's amusement park usually relies on J-1 visa workers, a program which allows foreign students to come to the U.S. for the summer months to work.
2019, we had 37 J-1 visa students. Last year, we had zero, and this year, we have two. Unfortunately, by the time things opened up, they weren't allowed to travel. So there are very few J-1 visa students. They're really, really important to help us get through the end of the season when we lose a lot of our high school and college students back to school.
Instead, Funland alums have stepped up. Veronica Evans saw a Facebook post about employees needed and answered the call.
Step right up.
There's a group called Funland Employees, past and present. One of the family members had posted, "Hey alumni, we've been seeing you liking our post about needing employees. Basically, we're gonna call you on your bluff." I said, "Seriously, you'll take a 47-year-old?" And they said, "We're willing to be super flexible."
All right, guys, here we go.
I worked here the one summer when I was 16, and I absolutely loved it.
Veronica worked at Funland after her sophomore year of high school in 1990 and thought helping this summer would be, well, kind of fun.
So I've worked the rides, I've worked the games, I've done the tickets, and just kind of whatever they need me to do.
Along for the ride and working by her side is her 15-year-old son, Will.
It's been really good for both of us, just kind of renewing our socialization skills and seeing everybody in a great positive atmosphere.
Even though Veronica was willing to go back, there just aren't enough workers like her.
As we go through the month of August, we're going to have to selectively close games and rides because we just won't have the staff to run them. And so we certainly will ask our customers to be patient and we will do the best we can. We certainly want to accommodate as many of our customers as possible, but there's a limit to what you can do.
That seems to be the mantra here. There is a limit to what a business owner can do. Unlike workers, thankfully, optimism for the future is plentiful.
I think there's always a light at the end of the tunnel. You just have to keep working through it. In the long run, everything will work out. It's just going to be a little bit tougher now.
Our thanks to Deirdre. Up next, charges of institutional racism on campus.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
There is a persistent lack of diversity in higher education overall, from tenure to faculty representation. But our own study shows when the faculty is more diverse, students of color have higher graduation rates. Here's ABC's Deborah Roberts.
I tend to be, you know, rather controversial in things, and so I stand for a lot of issues that cut against the grain.
Dr. Cornell West is unapologetically opinionated.
Do you think we can meet the challenge?
Trait he credits for his trailblazing career.
Let us never be afraid in the face of hatred.
But now the philosophy professor says it's part of the reason he's leaving his prestigious post at Harvard Divinity School, recently tweeting his resignation letter after he was denied tenure.
You had been tenured before, not only just at Harvard, but other schools. So why not this time?
I was a university professor at Harvard, then a university professor at Princeton. And then they're going to come to me and say, well, you know, we don't really think that you can undergo tenure because we can't really give you the reasons. I've been a black man in America for over 60-some years. I know what's going on. It had nothing to do with academics.
So you were saying that this isn't just about race. It could be about politics, activism,
oh,
all kinds of things.
Absolutely. It's about anti-Palestinian sensibility. It's about critiques of Wall Street to issues that in some ways could possibly present a challenge.
Tenure exists to protect academic freedom.
Irene Mulvey is president of the American Association of University Professors. Her organization helps develop standards and policies for higher education.
You're not worried about your job security for teaching the wrong thing or saying the wrong thing or because somebody doesn't like what you're researching.
After the outcry, Harvard administrators offered Dr. West a five-year contract and a title with a consideration of a future tenure bid, but he declined. In a statement, Harvard Divinity School thanking Dr. West for his enormous contribution to issues of racial justice, saying they'd hope to retain him on our faculty for many years to come.
Your departure was devastating to a number of students, many saying that you were the first black professor they had ever had. Did you owe it to some of those students, though, to somehow find a way to stay because of your impact?
I did. I mean, I stayed to fight because Harvard offered me more money. They'd offer me big chairs. And I said, it's not about that. If you can't even undergo a tenure process, you can't negotiate respect in that regard.
3 months after that public tenure dispute, New York Times Magazine journalist Nicole Hannah-Jones reignited the debate, announcing she was turning down a night chair position at her alma mater, the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, after it didn't initially offer her tenure for a role that had always come with tenure.
I think it showed that there was not a respect for what black faculty go through on campus and that they need to have the stated and public support and the courage of leadership when our work is challenged.
The numbers show that across the board, colleges are suffering from lack of representation. ABC News data team analyzed the most recent U.S. Department of Education reports on more than 4,000 schools, finding that 70% of faculty are white, even though a little more than half the students enrolled are non-white. The data also indicating that non-white professors are less likely to make tenure. Only 10% of all tenured professors are people of color. Nicole Hannah-Jones is now set to be the inaugural night chair in race and journalism at historically Black Howard University.
Simply resolving my issue doesn't resolve the larger obstacles of discrimination that Black faculty and particularly Black women scholars face all across this country.
What you can see is a Black woman not getting what was given automatically to everyone that came before her.
In a statement, the university said it is disappointed that Hannah-Jones won't be joining the faculty and that the school is working toward a more inclusive and equitable campus.
Higher education is not immune to systemic and institutional racism. Faculty of color are always asked to serve on diversity, inclusion, and equity task force. And as a result, when faculty of color come up for tenure, they may have found they didn't have the same amount of time for research as their white colleagues.
That imbalance is also a disservice to students. ABC's analysis found that non-white students at colleges with more diverse faculty actually have higher graduation rates.
That is the key to success for students.
Even so, a breakdown of full-time professors finds that Black males, Black females, and Latino males each accounted for 2%, while Latina females made up just 1%. A minuscule number with a significant impact. Georgetown University senior Yuritsa Aguilar is the first in her family to go to college. Her parents, immigrants from Central America, and she says professors of color have been crucial throughout her education.
You feel comfortable asking them, like, hey, could I get an extension? Could I get a letter of recommendation? And you don't feel like a sense of imposter syndrome. With a Latino professor, or even a minority professor, it's so much easier to approach them and sort of talk about your upbringing, especially if they have, you know, that same shared like family experience, cultural experience, language experience. My parents work minimum wage jobs. I've gone to public school my whole life. Daughter of immigrants. Oh my gosh, I want to get emotional. I'm sorry.
If they see faculty that look like them, the message they get is that I can succeed here. I can succeed in this field.
Early last year, Yuritsa was part of a group of student volunteers who helped the school hire two more Latino professors in the History and American Studies departments. Now she wants to change the school's landscape even more, starting a petition to create a Latino Studies minor.
I wanted to see what else students could do. What do we need to build upon? No justice, no peace. After like the murder of George Floyd, I think Georgetown has been more responsive and more critical about the way they have dealt with diversity. So they've recently established a racial justice initiative and hired a new professor of color. But we want to be able to hold Georgetown accountable.
The reality is there has been great progress, right?
Yes, there's been.
Non-white professors are being tenured at higher rates than ever before. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Why has there been progress? The racism is still at work in each and every one of these institutions, yet there's decent people of all colors who are willing to fight against it. That's the good news.
Our thanks to Deborah. Finally tonight, in Milwaukee, a celebration not seen in 50 years. Today, thousands line the streets to celebrate their champions, including the series MVP, the Greek freak, Giannis Antetokounmpo. That's Nightline for this evening. Catch our full episodes on Hulu. We'll see you right back here, same time tomorrow. Thanks for the company, America. Good night.